It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time once again for another edition of Valley Edition. And I'm happy to welcome into the studio on a gorgeous, beautiful day here in what passes for summer, Terry Snyder. Thank you for coming in out of the sun.
It was a nice walk in, Mike.
And I also want to welcome Zaz Hollander, who's on the phone in some shady place. Thank you, Zaz.
Shady. I'm not quite sure what you're up to there, Mike.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm guessing you're inside. You're not sitting on the beach.
That's true. There's actually a mama moose and two little calves right outside. So
we're
going anywhere for a little bit.
Well, don't go out for a while.
Okay. Well, we had a couple of meetings this week, and we've also had a variety of other things that have happened out there in the world. Let's start outside with the world, first of all. This morning, it was revealed that Mr. Bourdain apparently committed suicide in Paris. He's a well-known raconteur and chef, and he's following on a woman who had a strong role to play in the fashion industry, who also a few days committed suicide. And I think what that has done is remind, because I've noticed that there have been increasing articles, summaries of what really has been a longstanding issue in the state of Alaska, as well as across the country, and apparently has not become a better thing. And that is recognizing individuals who are at a point in their lives where they may commit suicide, whether they're apparently depressed or not successful, or on the other hand, are successful. I bring that up because today we have an opportunity to play an interview with a young man who I think is known to you and many parts of our listening audience, Andrew Kirka, who came back from Korea with both a gold and silver medal in the Paralympics. And Joseph Davis did an interview with him, and it was a very interesting story because here's a guy that one might say at a very young age experienced something that would have put him in a depressed state, one would think, and that he broke his back. He lost the use of his legs pretty much. And yet he went on to compete aggressively at the top level on downhill skiing in areas that many fully functioning people would have difficulty doing. But I think the important point was his story. And I just wanted to mention that he is out and about. He works for the Paralympic Committee, but he also is training because he's continues to be a competitive skier in that area. So I guess I begin with the juxtaposition of those two and say we still don't know very much about what goes on inside people. Hopefully with some attention, I know people have been looking at the issues that move people in this direction. And we'll find some solutions. Let's go to Tuesday's meeting at the Borough Assembly. Zaz, you were not there. I noticed you. We waited, but they finally started the meeting. And Terry and I were there. And let me start by saying when I stumbled out about, 4 hours later, I felt like I had been in a maze. And I had been going this way and that, and I thought I saw the glimmer of light. And then I came out and I said, it's still light outside, but I'm not sure where I've been. Terry, can you help?
Well, I did talk to Zaz a little bit about this. Zaz, did you listen to the tape? And
yeah, I listened to the two public hearings.
What's that?
I listened to the two public hearings.
Yeah. You probably know the background on this a little bit more than I do, but this is a young man in up in the Sutton area that has 50 acres that he's been trying and actually successfully having a dirt bike track up at his property for some time and is trying to, I guess what you'd say, make it legal. Is that right, Zaz?
Yeah, it certainly make it easier and to not have to go through kind of big commercial racetrack permitting, conditional use permitting processes.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, it's your classic NIMBY slash land use situation where you have a guy who's, by all descriptions, doing a great thing, especially for young people who want a safe, you know, as safe as you can be on a dirt bike situation and organized and there's lots of noise controls, but there's only so much noise control you can do on dirt bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And so people in the neighborhood are, I thought some very eloquently expressing just how pervasive that is on their lives.
Yeah, and I think they were all very good about giving him support, saying they, you know, he was trying to do the right thing. They were great. They had kids when they were, had kids that age that they would have encouraged to be in there. Their kids all rode them, but now they've been there a long time. And a lot of them, it sounds like, live downwind from him. He's at the top of the hill, so all that noise kind of penetrates down. And they were, you know, it's not just the, he basically helped the borough write the code for small racetracks, which included the sanction to give 10 events a year. But what isn't addressed in the ordinance is the practice time. And what the homeowners, I think, brought up is, you know, we're not opposed so much to the 10 events a year. It's just that they practice every day between that so that there's really no relief given to homeowners. And that's kind of what the tussle came back about. And then a lot of, I'm not sure I have this completely unwound, whether this ordinance would affect the large racetracks in the end or not. I don't know, maybe you can speak more to that, Zaz.
It sounded like there was a, I don't know if confusion is the right word, but there was some clarification that was needed.
Yeah, and at the end they did modify it. Dr. Doty did pass an amendment. There were lots of amendments and second amendments being thrown around. It was kind of hard to follow. But in the end, she did pass an amendment, I believe, that gave at least one day of race-free time up there, purposely kind of opened the door for maybe Fridays to be that day, but that, and amended the hours instead of 10 a.m. in the morning till 10 at night to 10 until 8. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But to me, it's just another big reminder here where as dense as we are in the core, and we're becoming more dense all the time, we're going to get that way in these outlying areas too. And a lot of these people moved out there 30 or 40 years ago thinking they all with the purpose of having peace and quiet and having a lot of space between neighbors. And as that property turns over hands and things are developed and new people come in, they have a different idea of what they should be able to do to their properties. And it's something the borough has kind of kicked down the road, not wanting to put any type of regulation in, zoning in, and it's going to come roaring back with the next thing. I think at the last go-around with racetracks, Zaz, they actually got rid of the noise ordinance or did the decimals on it that
yeah,
it doesn't
I,
really.
I can't remember that offhand, but yes, they did. They monkeyed with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question for the two of you, because I tried to sort of diagram this and say, initially, when the ordinance appeared, and this came, as you've rightly described, as a result of a lot of work of making some changes in what existed, my understanding is what the initial intention was is to reduce, basically to apply, first of all, what existed into larger tracks, commercial tracks, to the smaller tracks, and to reduce the noise time frame. This seemed like a very simple thing, and yet, as you have listened, we have all listened to the entire public hearing, there seemed to have been anxiety about how this was going to shut down this particular small track. And I was trying to see where in what was said this was going to happen, because even without the amendment that the Assemblywoman Doty suggested, it didn't seem like this was going to interfere so much as to do that.
Well, I think this is just a classic case of people showing up, being This isn't the first issue that haven't really read the ordinance, isn't really explained to them, and the first reaction is, I'm going to have something taken away from me. Sort of classic of the wood stove situation. I can't burn wood anymore. Instead of really looking at the legislation and saying, look, we're putting some rails on what's going up here. For everybody's, doesn't mean you can't do it. It means there's a few good rules, and people just completely overreact. It was really apparent to me. There were some people who admitted it, actually, people that had not read the legislation at all and were just reacting from that space where they thought they weren't going to be able to participate in something that they thought and believed in. Did you get that, too, from the recording, Zaz?
Yeah, I mean, some. The few people who would come up and say you're going to shut down the track, or even more, you know, by shutting down this track, you're going to send, you know, children onto a path of crime. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I think that kind of doesn't kind of it hurts the cause because it is ill informed and just there were a number of very kind of cogent comments in defense of the track as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And there was confusion by the assembly even. I know that Mr. Mayfield at first was against it because he thought it would ace out the I did a bike and I did a rod and everything that goes on Big Lake, mostly in the wintertime, and it didn't even apply to that. So there was some confusion going into it, even though they did have a staff report, but it was... I'm not sure they did have a staff report. I missed the days of the staff reports myself.
Well,
I think that they certainly would be better served to have staff reports. I know that Assemblymember McKee requested one on the other hearing issue, the detached fourplexes.
Well, what they had...
It does seem as if they've had some gaps there where the entire discussion would be much better informed if the Assembly had
a good staff report
leading in.
Right, and I think that last phrase, leading in, is the important point because over and over again, Mr. Strawn was called up either to explain or predict where this might have an impact or suggest legislation or...
He was asked what they should do.
And I thought, yes, it was piecemealed out this way, and I think we're all in agreement. If you have a good summary pointing out the intention, the changes, et cetera, and any area that might be open for discussion that they saw. They made some decisions, the staff did, and they're presenting it, and it's entirely up to the Assembly to consider it. Yeah. But, of course, when we say the Assembly, the other point to be made is there were only five people sitting up there, and that the mayor was not there and Matthew Beck was not there. Mm-hmm. And I can only hypothesize how this might have gone differently if they had been there in terms of providing a slightly different process or even asking additional questions. Mm-hmm. But I think we've done this pretty well. The track continues to operate. I don't know that the kinds of issues brought up have been totally solved, and I suspect that we may hear again about noise and tracks and one thing or another. But we do have a second issue, and Zaz, you pointed out that you listened to the public hearing associated with the multifamily ordinance. What did you take away from that?
Well, I guess in full disclosure, I was multitasking and trying to monitor breaking news and listen to a meeting at the same time, which probably means I did neither well at all. But, I mean, this is, again, this is an issue where Alex Strawn was brought up. Apparently there was some kind of a last-minute discovery of some issues with the proposed changes, and so that decision also got kicked back a little bit so he could fix it. I'm wondering if Alex is maxed out because he normally is pretty high-functioning as a planner. This is an issue that's been around for some time now, and an issue where, because of borough code, a number of builders, in particular Byler,
who was there and
testified and pointed out some. His testimony was pretty straightforward, it seemed like. But so at this point, the borough code allows builders to put, I think it's what, 6 units on an acre. And that is resulting in some public concerns about density, but also about groundwater and drinking water well issues because of the density of septics that's involved. And so the borough is proposing to drop that to, I think it's 2 units per acre, 3 per a slightly larger area. Mm-hmm. But again, that got held off a little bit because Alex needed to fix some glitches with the paperwork.
Yeah, the number in the units was wrong right on the front page, and that got the ire right away of the assembly, who said, you know, we're not going to look at this because the very first page is wrong. But I think you make a good point. The borough staff has been cut, and not only, I think, is Mr. Strawn is in charge of enforcement, too, I think, unless they've changed things around compliance. Yeah. So he's got a lot of balls in the air, and he also goes to the Planning Commission meetings, too, so... There's a lot of people to cater to besides the public.
I think the interesting thing about that was when Alex admitted that there was this error. It had just come to their attention just before the meeting began. And at first I thought, oh, okay, it's just a change this number. You put the wrong number down because you intended something else and you just miswrote. But then as the assembly looked at it and they began to say, well, we can't just change this number. There's more to it than that. There's something that suggests that perhaps you have not paid attention to the implications of what this means. And certainly the builder, as he came up, he said, okay, I've started building under these guidelines. How does that all apply?
Yeah, what happens to this season's homes that are pre-sold? Do I go back and say it's going to cost you a lot more because I can't put as many on there?
Yeah.
So. Right, and what's the proof pre-sold? I mean, is there actually, you know, money down and plans approved and all things like that? So that, I do think it does need a little more work for sure.
Okay. Now, there was one other, and you may have missed that listening to the recording, Zaz, one other passionate testimony which came toward the end of the meeting where a gentleman sat for many hours and he had been formally involved with EMS and the volunteers and so on. And Terry, do you want to say?
I don't remember his name. I wish I would have brought my notes. It really was good. He sat up and had been part of this EMS, Kenai EMS, basically for 40 years back and forth. And he is very concerned with the fact that the minimal pay that it's mostly a volunteer-led group that does most of the protection for people in Alaska, and there's some 80 to 100 people on, has down in numbers from what they used to have. The pay is not good enough. And what he was most pointing out, and I think has a very valid concern, is where is the five-year plan of where we're going to go with this? It just looks like, you know, we're putting Band-Aids on it. And where is the plan, bigger plan for EMS? And I think it certainly penetrated enough with Dr. Doty on the assembly, because she asked, directed the manager, that she would like to hear from the department head, Mr. Featherly, to find out what exactly is their five-year plan. They're going to be rolling into a metropolitan. They're going to have to, because of the amount of people that are here, going to have to develop a metropolitan planning organization soon, and that has to be part of it. And so she's asking them to come forth and find out what's going on with that. So he knew his stuff, that's for sure. It sure sounded like it.
Yep, a lot of experience, 30 years or more in
30 or 40 here.
And of course, it was at a time a person to be heard at the end where, other than Assembly Member Doty, this was basically something that, it'll come back. He brought this up, and I'm just curious if we'll hear from the Assembly at the next meeting or something.
Yeah, not on this, that wasn't on this particular agenda, Zaz, but is there anything more that you know about the timber sale, and is that?
I think we talked last week that the transportation plan, the plans that they needed to file, are now out there.
For comment?
I separately was reporting, right, it's open for comment. I separately have been reporting a story on the kind of ongoing spruce bark beetle outbreak. And there was some kind of chattering in social media that sale is already being logged, but I haven't seen any any proof of that at this point.
Yeah, you know, you can see the beetle kill pretty. I don't know, you in that area for sure. I don't know about that far up, but I certainly see it even in the Big Lake area and
Meadow Lakes.
Yeah, Meadow Lakes.
Pittman.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And down in Anchorage, there are pockets in Anchorage as well, and so there are indications that this outbreak that they really started in earnest in 2016 and then blossomed last year. I think it was about 200,000 acres. Were estimated as part of probably a larger size sample as being damaged or destroyed by the beetles in 2016, and it was, I think, 400,000 last year, and that's from, it's centered in Mattsu, the central Susitna Valley, and also a little bit on the northwest Kenai, but there's pockets all over, and they're starting to see an increase in beetle numbers in Fairbanks as well.
Well, yeah, no, as I looked out the lake last weekend there, it just reminds me of what the lake looked like before the last fire. And it's looking amazingly the same way it did before that huge fire. So I hope they get do some outreach, too, to homeowners and say, hey, you know, cut these trees. There is a time you can cut and you can't cut, right? Isn't there when they're...
Yeah, they don't recommend cutting green
right.
trees. And then once you do cut an infested tree, there are things you should do to try to dry it out as quickly as possible and split it, chip it, do something to process it so it's not a living tree with a lot of sap to attract them. But when the beetles go into outbreak mode like this, it's very hard to stop them.
Wow.
You can, there's a pesticide you can spray, but it only works on a non-infected tree, and you can't, you know, broadly apply it. It's too expensive. And so you kind of have to try to save the living spruce you've got. It is a spruce beetle. We are at a somewhat of an advantage, I suppose, compared to the Kenai, where it really swept the beetle outbreak that started in the mid-90s, really damaged and swept through a lot of forest because it's so spruce dominant. Up here, at least, it's a mixed hardwood. There's birch and some cottonwood and stuff like that.
It'll be interesting
in there
to see
in terms of fire danger.
Interesting to see if it comes up at the assembly table.
And speaking about the assembly table, there are likely to be new faces around that table. I just had a chance to look down, and I said, okay, who is going to be up and running or potentially leaving, terming out, et cetera? Well, the mayor, Vern Halter, he's up, and there are three assembly people that are also up.
No, Mr. Kwaki.
And
Mr. He's running for something else.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Mr. McKee.
Mm-hmm.
And
Barbara Doty.
Mm-hmm. So we have the potential of having four new faces up there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is just our local situation. And, of course, we're looking toward the end of Friday at 4:30 for people to turn in their applications to replace Councilmember Brad Hansen, whose seat is open.
City of Palmer.
And that's at the City of Palmer. And we'll see how many people have decided to do that. And then, of course, the big news is the primaries coming up here with an interesting governor's race. Just reminding people that it appears that Governor Walker and his running mate will be running as independents.
So they won't be on the primary ballot.
They will not be on the primary ballot. And meanwhile, the primary ballots have the addition in the Democratic primary in particular. Mark Begich is there and arguably is the person to beat. He has certainly statewide recognition, et cetera. But then on over in the Republican primary, we also have three people of note. I'm not sure if there are how many total there are, but certainly former Senator, State Senator Don Levy has been running for a while. Former Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell has thrown in, and we have a local businessman, Scott Hawkins, who is also running. And so when this all comes to an end in August, the likelihood is that there will be, for the governor's race, three candidates. There will be Governor Walker, and a Democrat, and a Republican, and who knows?
Long time between now and then.
Oh, yes. And meanwhile, just to round things out, in the legislature, there are a number of people, including Les Guerra, who have indicated they're retiring, they're not running. So we're going to see some new faces there as well.
It'll be totally changed.
Right. So yeah. Before we finish, then, you mentioned that magic term, breaking news. Anything you'd like to throw in here before we finish up, Saz?
I don't know if there's anything majorly pertinent to Matt, too. I am working on another longer article about the what looks like a total bust for the Copper River commercial fishing season for sockeye for those.
Whoa, that's a big deal.
Copper River Reds that are all the subject of all that hype in the lower 48.
Well, it's also the subject of a lot of people's attention going to Chitna for dip netting.
Yep, for sure. And that fishery may close because they're so far short of the escapement goals, the numbers that they think they need to make sure that the run can reproduce itself.
So you really know how to cast a shadow over a sunny day.
That's my job.
Yeah, they actually had a testimony from the head of the Fish Commission at the assembly meeting, and they tacked on a special meeting, I think the 19th at 4:30, to hear from them about the wetlands mitigation. And
concerns that the Corps of Engineers isn't following the Clean Water Act.
So that's going to be sort of interesting to see that how that plays out. There's a lot of finger-pointing going on here.
Okay, well, we're going to point the finger toward the button that stops this whole thing because, once again, we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank Saz Hollander for sharing today.
Sure thing. Good to be here, Mike.
And I also want to thank Terry Snyder for coming in and sharing today as well.
Have a safe weekend. Come to Colony Days.
All right, and we'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.